So hi Mike, I'd like to welcome Andrew to the show. We've done the introduction for Andrew. So Andrew, good evening. Welcome to Clear Air Turbulence.
Thank you very much for inviting me to come and speak with you.
It's fantastic to have you on. And how's things with the projects and you personally?
Well, I suppose things are fine with me personally. I can sort of mention a bit about how I got involved with the Star Child, really, because I'm kind of a... not exactly what you'd call a backroom boy, but perhaps towards that sort of, you know, role. I kind of got involved with it in 2004 because I started off researching into these areas with the Disclosure Project, which I came across in 2003, and having, you know, lots of ongoing web searches and downloads, I eventually came across the Star Child, I think probably sometime in 2003. I found there was a video available which had been sold by a lady called Belinda McKenzie. And around the time I got that video, which was one of Lloyd's talks on his hominid and hominoid research, I found out about the Star Child Skull. And then I learned that he was coming to the UK. And I think he came to the UK in early 2004. I think it was about March or something like that, 2004. I can't remember the exact date. And I learned that he was going to be staying at Belinda's house in London, because he was coming to get some analysis done on the bone of the skull, because he'd established contact with a I think he was a pathologist of some kind, and he was involved with it, and Lloyd was coming over to get involved with doing these tests, and I then went down to meet him, and I ended up setting up a website for the updated aspects of the research, which at that time was based in the UK for a period, I think, of about 6 or 8 months or something like that. I spoke to the Staffordshire UFO group, a chap called Graham Allen there, and asked him if, you know, he would like Lloyd to come and speak at his group there, and we did a talk there. I took Lloyd over to do that talk. So that's how I got involved with it, really, and I followed Lloyd's developments ever since. He went back to the States, having had this bone analysis done, we then stayed in touch, and the last time I saw him was in the summer of 2009, when he was coming over to the UK again as part of a European tour, and I organised a venue in Nottingham for him to come and speak at, which was we managed to get a good attendance for that, and he'd actually put quite a lot of new information into the you know, this talk that he'd developed over the years. You know, obviously we're hoping that you can get to speak to him directly to explain all the details about the Star Child. We can sort of chop and change this a bit perhaps, but to give you a summary of what the skull is, I can do that sort of reasonably well, I think. It's a 900-year-old real bone skull. It's been carbon dated twice and given the same result of 900 years old, as I said, plus or minus 40 years. Superficially, when you look at it, it looks human. Very superficially, it looks human. But when you actually study it in any level of detail, you find that it has no sinuses. It has a cranial capacity of, I think, the figure is, I think 1600 cc's, whereas in a comparable human skull, the cranial capacity would only be, I think, 1200. I might have those figures slightly wrong, but that's the basic idea. It's a much larger cranial capacity. All the bones of the skull are kind of reconfigured from where they would normally appear in a human skull. The bone itself is much lighter than human bone, and it is also thinner. If you look at the chemical components of it, and the chemical sort of composition, rather, perhaps is a better word, it's closer to being collagen than it is actually to what human bone is like. So it is completely different There's no question of it being a hoax because, as I say, it's been laboratory tested. We've had DNA samples that have been taken. There's been two separate DNA tests. The first one, as Lloyd mentioned, was rather botched, actually, because of the way it was done. And I, you know, Lloyd may not agree with me when I say this, but I have a feeling that I think that the way that test was done was probably an attempt to keep the Star Child School out of the limelight, because the test, I think, said that it had human DNA in it, which wasn't strictly accurate in the way it was presented. But Lloyd, you know, tells that story in his talk. And this presentation that we did in Nottingham, I made a DVD of that. It's not what you'd call a professional production, but that's available from my website, and I sell it at a cost price, which is, you know, literally you can have a copy for £1, including postage, which is essentially what it cost me to make it and send it out. So, you know, I'm certainly not out to make any money out of this. Lloyd isn't out to make any money out of this. He's actually, as he describes, taking a vow of poverty to allow people to get access to the information related to this school, and he's been doing this for over 10 years now. I've certainly maintained my interest because you find that the UFO community doesn't really speak about the Star Child School very much. It is the best piece of publicly available physical evidence, which someone has gone on the record. We know who owns it, we know where it was found, we know the story of it. It is the best piece of physical evidence which proves, as far as I'm concerned, it proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that non-human beings have interacted with human beings 900 years ago. I don't really see any other way, looking at the evidence that Lloyd has so far compiled, that there can be any other viable explanation which fits the available evidence. So that is my reason for wanting to help out Lloyd, you know, in presenting this information. Made this DVD. I did the website few years back, which was, you know, it's been transferred onto another website because Lloyd went back to the States after his you know, his time here. But I really do wish that, you know, more people would pay attention to the data that's available. You can get all the salient stuff is available on Lloyd's Star Child website, which is www.starchildproject.com. You can download all the main things there for free. If you want to get the ebook, which he calls it, the kind of sort of like the Cliff Notes, you know, version of the story of the Star Child. Lloyd has produced this ebook, which I believe you can download it for about, I think it's about $16 or something. I can't remember the exact cost, but you'll find it linked on the website. I also must mention Belinda McKenzie again, because she actually supported Lloyd when he was going to, you know, sort of put aside the Star Child in 2003, because he'd taken it round to many experts. Some of them just turned their noses up at it. Others would give him information or tell him things, but they wouldn't want to go on the record and be associated with this. And so by the end of, 2003, Lloyd felt he'd done as much as he could with it, and he tried to raise some money for doing some DNA tests at Trace Genetics, because there was a new DNA sequencing technique had been developed by that around that time, but it was going to cost, it was something like about £16,000 or $16,000 to do these DNA tests. And Belinda McKenzie stepped forward, and she decided to fund these tests out of her own money, because she wanted to know the truth about what the DNA of the Star Child bone would show. And so that was done in 2003, and I think you can download the Trace Genetics report about the Star Child DNA of that time. And Lloyd will give you all the details, but the basic details are these, in that when those DNA tests were done, as I recall, that there are two types of DNA that you can test for. You can test for the mitochondrial DNA, which is the DNA which is within the cells, mitochondria, which are inside your cells, And these, the mitochondrial DNA comes from the mother's side. There is no paternal DNA in the mitochondria. And then the nuclear DNA, that's outside the cell nucleus. So they wanted to test the nuclear DNA as well. Part of the story which I didn't explain, I mean, stop me if you want to ask me any questions or anything. One part of the story I didn't explain is that when the two skulls were found, there were two together. There was a Star Child skull and there was a human skull found at in the same location, which was in a mine, in a cave in a mine in Mexico in 1930. And having been in a mine, which was dry, away from the light, the actual bone was in very good condition for the age of the bone, because it hadn't, you know, there hadn't been much bacterial action on it to break it down. And when they did the DNA tests from the human skull, they got the requisite DNA which they were looking for. They recovered the mitochondrial DNA, and I think I've got this the right way around. Again, Lloyd would need to confirm this. So they recovered from the human skull, they recovered both the nuclear DNA and the mitochondrial DNA, and it's classed as ancient DNA because it's over 50 years old. Then they did the same test on the Star Child skull, and they recovered the mitochondrial DNA, but they didn't recover the nuclear DNA, which was very strange because the skulls were right next to each other, and therefore if you recovered the nuclear DNA on the human skull, you should have recovered it on the Star Child. So the inference drawn from that is that when they found out the mitochondrial DNA showed that Star Child had a human mother, its mitochondrial DNA was human, but the nuclear DNA didn't, the primers didn't attached to this DNA at all. It wasn't there. And so it looks like the father, the inference was, again, Lloyd will give you a little bit more detail on this, but the nuclear DNA didn't come up, so the implication from that was that the father was not human. In other words, the DNA primers, which would pick up the human DNA, didn't work, because there wasn't any human DNA present in the samples, whereas there was mitochondrial DNA present. But to actually prove that up, you do need a further DNA test, but the way of doing it wasn't available in 2003. It needed a more advanced technique to recover the DNA, which was developed, I think, in 2006 by a group who call themselves 454 Life Sciences. And they're actually using this technique to recover Neanderthal DNA, which of course is from skulls that I think are, I don't know, 10,000 years old or something, maybe older. I think it's maybe even 50,000 years old. I'm not sure of the age, but it's much, much older that they can go back and recover the DNA and they can reconstruct the DNA base pair by base pair, because the DNA is arranged in these base pairs. These four compounds, I think they're amino acids, I can't remember the names of them, but Lloyd goes through all this in his talk, and this is in the DVD that I've got. And so he was waiting for a more advanced DNA test to become available so that they could then prove how far away from human the Star Child's father was, because that's what it was looking like from the earlier DNA tests, that the Star Child's father wasn't human.
Can I ask a question now?
Sure.
It's really just a question, because I've been looking into UFOs, aliens, paranormal for about 25, maybe 30 years now. I'm getting on a bit nowadays. Mm. And in all that time, I must say the evidence for the ETH, or the extraterrestrial hypothesis, hasn't struck me as being convincing. But to carry this discussion forward, you have to be a believer in some kind of alien visitation, yeah?
No, you don't, because you're looking at DNA evidence, which, as Lloyd says, is biology turned into maths, or maths turned into biology, whichever way you look at it. I like that expression. I don't know if that's his expression or whether he got it from somebody else.
Right.
You know, my website, the way I look at this is to look at things based on the evidence, as we talked about briefly in the introduction. You know, my background has been in software engineering, and as far as possible, in as much as possible, I work with evidence that you can prove, that you can determine, that you can make deductions from. Now, of course, we all know that working in this and researching in this sort of field, it's very rare that that's possible. And I, you know, to go back to a point I made earlier, I think that the problem for the Star Child is that the evidence is so compelling to me, a lot of people can't believe it. Because it is so compelling, they're so used to this question being up in the air and being debatable that they can't deal with the idea of it actually being settled. So I kind of, you know, would put back your point that extraterrestrial hypothesis, it has never been compelling. I would say quite the reverse of that from the stuff that I've looked at. I would say it's the only thing that answers the evidence for part of it. But it's a very complicated picture, and we are also looking at things that humans seem to have access to, which look as if they might be extraterrestrial, but actually they're not. You know, I'm talking about things like black projects and things like this sort of thing.
Yes, sure.
So I believe it is across the board. And then, you know, when you get into some of the Wilbert Smith material, which is something I've also studied in some detail, which I think there's also a lot of compelling evidence in Wilbert Smith's material, you start to get into the areas of metaphysics, which, of course, Lloyd Pye doesn't talk about. But what he has tried to do in more recent years, and again, this is in his talk, he covers this very well, is look at what the Star Child, you know, seems to be, you know, where it seems to fit into the picture of evolution. And he started off in the realm of looking at the work of Zechariah Sitchin.
Yes.
Now, of course, Zechariah Sitchin concludes from the study of the Sumerian tablets that this race of beings called the Anunnaki, who looked like humans, but they weren't. They came here, aeons past. I think he gives this figure of they got here 350,000 years ago or something like that. I can't remember the exact date. I haven't studied the Sitchin material in depth. I've only read one of his books, and I've
he
read Lloyd's
cycles, doesn't he?
Does he? Right.
As it keeps coming round. Yes.
Yes, and so Lloyd felt that perhaps he doesn't say this in his talks, but how he got into this was really through the Sitchin material and how he was looking at Bigfoot being a different line of, you know, hominid or hominoid life form to humans. And he felt that there was some relationship with that to the Sitchin material. And he covers this in his book, Everything You Know Is Wrong. He goes into all that detail. So I certainly feel, and let's also get something on the table which a lot of people are not aware of, and that's Francis Crick and Orgel's paper, Directed Panspermia, which I believe was published in the Journal of Planetary, I can't remember the name of the journal, but it was published in a peer-reviewed journal in 1972 or 1973. Francis Crick was proposing that life on Earth had come about from what's called directed panspermia. So this is the co-discoverer of DNA putting this on the table. So some scientists are willing to entertain the idea that living creatures may have started their evolution elsewhere. And not only that, that's the idea of panspermia, but directed panspermia means that those living materials were brought here deliberately. That's what the phrase directed panspermia means. So, you know, something like the Star Child at some level would fit into that type of, conclusion. And I certainly feel, looking at what I've looked at, that it's really Star Child does fit into that. And it does prove to me that human beings have been interacting with non-human beings at some level in centuries past. I think it could tie into some of what Sitchin was talking about as well.
So what you're saying is this is not an accidental, or what you're trying to say in this research, this is not an accidental interbreeding, it's a manipulation.
Correct. It has some purpose. The other thing that Lloyd hasn't mentioned in his recent talks, I think for reasons of time more than any other reason, is that he heard about what are called these star being legends. And if you go to South America, some of the communities there have what are called these star being legends, and they say that a being would come down from the sky, from the stars. They would interbreed with the women in the village who were not fertile or whatever, or weren't partnered up or something. I can't remember the exact details. And then they would give birth to a child, and then the star beings would say to them, "You have to look after this child, and when it's 6 years old, we will come back and collect it." Or maybe it was that they would collect it when it was born and bring it back 6 years later or something. But
I think it was they'd leave it till it was five or six, then collect, actually.
We've obviously read some of these stories. I mean, again, I haven't researched that in depth, but Lloyd, in his talk, tells a story of a lady who was harvested. And the point that he makes in telling that story is that this lady, I think her name was Rosie Gallant, because she went to see her, and she drew him some pictures. She was an artist, and she drew him some pictures of how she was, her child was taken, she was harvested, but she was taken aboard the spacecraft to see the child, and they said to her, this is your child, and she drew these pictures. And when Lloyd took the shape of the skull, and this you can see this in the talk that he gives, she'd drawn a side profile and a front profile and several, I think three drawings, possibly two, maybe three, and she described the scenario. The actual shape of the child's head, which she'd drawn accurately, matched up with the star child very well. So this is what I mean about trying to corroborate different sorts of evidence. A lot of people are not willing to do that. Lloyd is one of those people who he's looked at the Sitchin, he's looked at the abduction scenario, he's looked at these stories of interbreeding, and he's tried to tie them up with the star child and see what comes out.
Can I just interject really quickly? Is this not just anecdotal evidence, though, more conjecture? Anecdotal evidence doesn't really a clue to real evidence, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. What I'm saying is, the star child itself, the star child skull, isn't anecdotal. It has been tested scientifically.
No, but these stories from other people further.
I'm not claiming that those are scientific evidence. What I'm saying is, you have a choice. If you find something like the star child and you get it tested, you can just leave it in a box and say, all we can say is, the DNA doesn't look normal. And you can say that's proved. If you want to take a kind of a limited view of it, you can say, what can you say? You can say, right, the bone doesn't match human configuration. The bone density is all wrong. And you can lay out all those facts, and Lloyd does this in his talk, and you can present all those to science, to the scientific establishment, as he essentially has tried to do. And I've, written to one or two people in the past and pretty much given up because somebody said to him, look, Lloyd, no matter how many of these differences stack up, you can give me 10,000 of these differences, right? Nature can do anything. He said, this is what apparently the scientist said to him. I don't know who this guy was. Nature can do anything. So you can take that view if you want. You can just say, we've got all these facts, all these 10,000 anomalies that stack up, and you can put them in front of you or put them on a DVD or whatever, and then you can say, we just don't know. And if people want to do that, of course, that's their absolute right to do that. But, people like me and Lloyd, we want to say, well, look, we know that this is not normal, so let's see if we can find anything else and fit it into a larger picture. And that's the type of person I am. So that's when we go out to these other stories, like the star being legends. Yes, they're anecdotal. Yes, we don't have any, corpses that we can dig up, and this sort of thing. And same with Rosie Gallant. Well, all we have is her story. But, somebody is going to know when they were pregnant and not pregnant, you know. It's not, I don't think it's something they're going to make up, you know. Okay, is it a delusion? Well, yeah, it might be a delusion. She might have had a bad dream and she's got some mental condition that makes her think it's real. Or she was hypnotized, you know, and then she thinks it's real. But how come she drew this story in that was so uncanny and like the shape of the Star Child skull? You know?
Well, there is coincidence.
Of course, I know that's what you're left with. So you're then faced with what to make of it. So, you know, I appreciate that and that's fine, but I'm of the view of looking at the bigger picture, looking at things like the Travis Walton case, which of course is very well documented and very interesting, and then also going on from there, you know, without digressing too much from the Star Child, but looking at why they changed Travis Walton's abduction experience when they made the film, which by all accounts was a marvellous film according to Travis, except for the abduction experience, which was totally changed and totally inappropriate to what he experienced. And in talking about those sorts of issues, I know in myself from the research that I've done around many of these topics that there is a group of people here who are trying to keep all this muddled up and covered up. They're deliberately trying to set things up so that people have the least chance of making sense of it. And
why would they do that, though? If the government is looking for life out there, why would they try and cover it up to block the research to prove what you're trying to prove?
Because once it becomes established, most of the power structures here will be compromised severely. You know, once it is shown that advanced technology really does exist, and we don't need fossil fuels, we can travel to the stars easily. Once it is shown that those technologies are real, then most of the geopolitical situation and the economic structure of the current world as it is would be compromised and would have to change. And there are people with vested interests in restricting our freedom. And this is where you get onto the reasons why, you know, which is when we start talking about things like what Wilbert Smith talked about. He didn't talk about so much about manipulating people, but he talked about metaphysics. You then get into a spiritual realm about how things are being manipulated to keep certain groups of people in a state of lowered consciousness, if I can put it in that way. So, you know, that's really going off what the Star Child, but I think really the Star Child and some of the other research that I've tried to look into, the common theme as I look at them is that they are so powerful and so compelling that if they really did get traction on a wide audience, they would force this change in consciousness much more rapidly and much more completely, this change of consciousness that a lot of people are talking about. And there is an ongoing agenda which has been going on for thousands of years to prevent people from understanding this what this higher consciousness means, you know, and that just goes across everything. It's not just to do with aliens. It's to do with religion and science, and everything basically boils down to this issue of consciousness. Now, you know, I'm really speaking out of turn from Lloyd because he doesn't talk about these sorts of topics. But I'm putting the Star Child into the picture as I see things. You know, I've discussed some of the things in brief with what I'm telling you, but with him in brief. But he, you know, he likes to stick to the Star Child and his own research, and he'll look at some of this other stuff and say, yeah, well, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's right. But as far as I'm concerned, as Lloyd says, science should be jumping all over the Star Child. It should be jumping all over it. Now, of course, when you see that it isn't, people then look at that and think, oh, well, there can't be anything in it then. It must just be a mistake. Because if it was as compelling as Andrew Johnson or Lloyd Pye says, then I'd know about it. I should know about it. So therefore, because I don't know about it, it can't be compelling. So, you know, that's the kind of loop that you get stuck into with this sort of material. And, you know, it's the only thing we can do, Lloyd and I can do, is say, here's the data, here's what other people have said about it, this is why we think they're wrong and this is why we think we're right. And you really, you know, essentially you have to leave it there, because I know that no university professor or doctor is going to come out on Monday morning and say, do you know, over the weekend I looked at this Star Child Project website and I went to see Lloyd Pye and I held the Star Child skull in my hands and I'm convinced it's an alien-human hybrid. I'm convinced of that.
No, why wouldn't they do that?
Because it would be career suicide. It would be career suicide. And you can actually see this happening. The only person that I'm aware of who's actually gone somewhere close to doing that is a guy called Ted Robinson, who did one of the first reports on the Star Child skull. I'd have to go and check what his background was. He might have been involved in either dental work or something along those lines to do with analysis of bones. He's gone about the furthest in saying that the Star Child doesn't match any known human configuration. A few others have contributed things, but sometimes anonymously. You know, I know that people aren't going to do that because it's too dangerous. Because I've also seen the UFO Hunters documentary where they had a professor on, or a doctor from... Oh, where was it? What was his name? You can watch this. The UFO Hunters program with the Star Child on it is on YouTube. You can go and watch this yourself. And the thing that struck me about that program was they had this Arizona doctor, I forget his name, I'd have to go and watch it, but he was a specialist on exobiology, the idea of extraterrestrial life and looking at things like panspermia and whatnot. And he did this little presentation for the UFO Hunters guys. Bill Burns was one of them, I can't remember the name of the two other guys. And it's a nice little presentation about, you know, life in the galaxy and how it was probable, and the Drake Equation and the work that's been done since the Drake Equation was produced by Frank Drake. He was quite enthusiastic, saying, we think there probably is life on other planets, and da-di-da-di-da. And then they had the Star Child skull with them, because Lloyd had lent it to them for a while to make the program. And they actually pulled out the real Star Child skull, because it had the one that had the bone taken out of it. And they put this skull in this guy's hands and says, what do you think to this then? And you can just watch his face. It's like, oh my God. You could almost see the colour drain from his face, you know. If it had been a closer shot.
Of not knowing what to say next at that point.
Yeah, precisely.
There's kind of three options for the... and I'm coming, sort of, no pun intended, back down to earth a little bit from my perspective. And there were three options presented. It's either a grey, a hybrid, or a deformity, yeah?
Yes, well, essentially that's those are the three, yes, correct.
That's the three. Of the deformity, and I've done a bit of research, I've looked around, obviously. I've actually followed the project for many, many years, and I was gutted when the DNA analysis failed in 2006, but anyway.
Right.
Now, you mentioned deformities, and you focus on two different types of deformity on the website. One is cradle boarding, and one is hydrocephaly.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
but
right.
But don't mention... any others, specifically mentioning things like brachiophalic conditions?
There are a number of ones. I've not heard of brachiophalia. There's Crouzon's disease, that's another one. There was another one that somebody came up with. Somebody contacted me through the website, and I can't remember the name of it. I think it had the name of some animal in the syndrome. It was like... I forget the name of it, and that was one I'd never heard of. But the problem with all these deformities is they will typically lead to asymmetry of some kind. Or if you look at, for example, the Star Child's X-ray, if the bone is somehow deformed, then the vein pattern, because you can actually see the veins in the X-ray, you know, from where the veins were in the, you know, up against the skull and therefore affecting its growth. In all of those cases, deformities on a large scale would lead to asymmetry in the skull, but that's not what you see. And the problem is that although you can take one deformity, that will only explain perhaps, you know, one or two of the characteristics of the skull, and then you still have probably at least four or five others to explain.
So the quote by the Craniofacial Center, Dr. Jeffrey Fearon?
Not familiar with that.
He's basically commented that the skull shape is clearly from a brachycephalic. I can't even say it.
Brachycephalic. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is typical, you see, because it's easier. And if you think of an academic, it's much, much easier for them to come out with the name of some academic, some abnormality that you and I can't even pronounce than it is to say, oh, yeah, it's an alien.
No, I actually appreciate that, and it's so easier. But he's saying that actually the evidence strongly suggests that that skull was from like a genital defect and specific.
But of course, you get all the experts saying that. But if you go back to the expert and write to him and say, well, look, can you show me one of these brachycephalic skulls which has, 40% bone density?
Yeah.
Can you give me a sample of that brachycephalic skull? Let me cut a piece of bone for it, put it in the dissolve it in the solution that we use for the DNA test, and watch it for a week while it doesn't dissolve, whereas normally it would dissolve in an hour.
Yeah, indeed.
So you're looking at physical evidence here, and you're looking at we know the provenance of this skull. It's not as if this is some guy, in Mexico with a bit of the Roswell crash who won't reveal his name, won't say where he got this metal.
Yeah.
And isn't prepared to lay it out of the glass case that he's got in his lounge. You've heard these stories. This is not like that.
No.
And this is why, to me, it is so compelling and why I've supported it so strongly, in the ways that I've been able to, which is very, very small, really. But Lloyd's the expert, and he's been at this for 10 years answering he would address the question that you raised with the brachycephalia thing. He'll probably have a list of 25 of those, which I've never even heard of. The ones I can bring to mind are Crouzon's disease, I think it is, the cradle-boarded hydrocephalic, and this other one that somebody came up with. And I said the same to them, but they just wrote me a rude message by in return,
That's not nice of them, is it? At least they could to give you a proper answer.
Well, I don't think this person was a doctor. I think it was just somebody... you get some terrible things. I mean, I don't know whether I should mention this, but you can edit this out if you want. But I went onto a forum. I didn't go onto a forum. Yeah, I know, I'm remembering the story. When Lloyd's talk was, we got the date last year, which was, I think, the 25th of June, we did the talk in Nottingham. Since I got that date firmed up and booked the venue, I started posting it round to people, and I have a friend, and he posted it on a forum called UFO Evolution. Mm. And then somebody came onto this forum. I didn't post it on the forum. It was a friend of mine posted it and said there was this talk in Nottingham about the Star Child. And then this poster came onto the forum, and she said, oh, Lloyd Pye's a fraud. He goes round defrauding young mothers out of money to get their story about alien abductions. And I'm thinking, what? What's going on? Where's the evidence that you've got that he's doing that? He wouldn't do a thing like that. And even if he did, you'd need some evidence. This person was basically slagging him off completely in a very rude way without any evidence. So, and this is the sort of thing that I've had to endure, for the Star Child, but for other reasons. Because once you get close to something, you start to get some very strange effects coming out, and you get attacked in really strange ways. And the other story which Lloyd will tell you, which is perhaps not quite as sickly as that one, but it's his treatment by Wikipedia. And if you get the DVD that I sell for £1, you'll hear him tell this story in the talk that he did, because somebody asked him about what Wikipedia had written about the Star Child skull and the references that it links to. And he told the story of what happened with that, and that's a very interesting story, how he was unable to get the entry about him changed on Wikipedia. And he actually rang up the guy who's one of the main people that actually owns the site, and asked to talk to him. Yeah. And it was quite surprising what this guy actually ended up saying. So, when you're attacked like this, and you're really not given a fair hearing, I think you can pretty much be sure you're onto a winner. That's been my experience. Particularly not just because of that. If that was the only thing, then that would be pretty silly. But when you've got the scientific evidence to back up what you're saying, in multifarious ways, you've got the bone chemistry, you've got the the uniformity of the skull, even though it's not the right human shape. You've got the x-rays, you've got a CAT scan, you've got dental tests, you've got bone chemistry, you've got all these tests that have already been done, you've got the DNA tests which show anomalous results. You've got all that stuff stacked up, so you can be pretty sure that you're onto a winner. And really what you're fighting against is the tide of the status quo, really, which is very, very powerful.
There's a couple of things that still bother me, really, and the one is this tie to the grey culture, which we've, if you look at ufology over the last, mm-hmm. say, 60 years, the kind of sightings have changed over the time.
Yes, that's true.
And so have the alien types as well. So isn't the grey alien just a sort of a typical alien creature that we're now describing, that we wouldn't have been describing 40 years ago? And if this had happened 40 years ago, would we be even having this conversation? So I mean, because it wouldn't happen to look like a grey alien, perhaps.
Well, the way I would sort of answer that is as follows, really. I mean, it is my understanding that there are some petroglyphs, which, I'd have to go and check on this, but I have the understanding that there are some petroglyphs which are, tens of thousands of years old, which show beings not unlike grey aliens. That would be one thing I should suggest.
Yeah.
Although this, as you quite rightly point out, a lot of the stories of greys are contemporary. It may be that before that there were stories of greys, we just didn't hear about them. Because remember in the 50s and 60s when we started to get widespread use of radio and television, and so stories about aliens were able to be promulgated more, whether they were true or whether they were false, or whether they were just, people having sleep paralysis or whatever, partially fitting explanation you care to come up with.
Yeah.
We also don't know if the Star Child. Let's just suppose the Star Child is a human alien, human non-human or human alien hybrid. Whatever the father was, we have no idea what it looked like, because we don't have any physical, bone evidence of. We don't have the father's skull or the father's arm or any part of its body, so we don't know, what the father looked like, and it may only have looked like a grey in the actual shape of the skull. The rest of its body may have been completely different to what people describe as greys. So, although it's been likened to the shape of a grey alien head, and I agree with that, it does look like the shape of a grey alien head. That's certainly by no means proven that the greys that people are reporting in these stories are the same as what the Star Child is descended from or related to. We're not at the point of proving that. The thing that is proved, as far as I'm concerned, is not human. It doesn't fit into the human, gallery of what human skulls are like. It's way outside human for all the reasons that we've already mentioned, and probably a few more that we haven't. So that's what I would point out about it. Yes, we don't know if it's a grey hybrid. We don't even know if greys exist. But from looking at the preponderance of evidence, it does seem something like them does.
If you look back at human history, though, and we talk about aliens nowadays basically because we're a space-faring race, but mm-hmm. we're just at the doorstep. If we took this story back, I don't know, say 500 years, and the current kind of belief system in play there was for demons and devils, then we wouldn't be talking about this skull being the skull of an alien. We'd be talking about it being the skull of a gnome or some kind of other kind of creature, yeah?
I agree, but this is really a question of language and the way that things are perceived. I mean...
Yeah, but my point now is, looking now back at that, we would just giggle at that and say, well, of course it wasn't a gnome. That was,
Some people wouldn't. Some people wouldn't. It depends on your name. On your name things. I mean, the reason why I pick you up on that is because Lloyd has looked at hominoid research, and one of the things that comes to my mind is he talks about this being which is called an Ogogwe, which is actually, you might call it a gnome. And these, there was a, remember the Hobbit skull was discovered about 3-4 years ago. And if you remember that story,
yes,
where this
yes.
skull of the Hobbit, they nicknamed it the Hobbit. But as Lloyd pointed out, from the research that he'd done prior to this story coming out, his name that he'd found for it in the culture was Anagogwe. Again, he'd have to talk about that. So what I'm saying is that the Star Child is unusual, but there may be more unusual beings around in the fossil record than have currently been recognised. I mean, he points out in his talk about the coneheads. And if you look at the coneheads, which are in Peru, you know, again, the experts say that these huge long skulls, which I think have 3,000 cc's, I think it is, capacity, all the experts say, oh, it's just head binding. You know, you can actually bind the head and make it grow to this enormous. But again, you're just way outside with that sort of level of increase in the brain capacity. On an ordinary human body, it would just fall apart. But because the experts say it's all head binding, everyone else just accepts it, and they don't actually look at. They don't go and test the bone. They don't do DNA tests on it, you know. And Lloyd says that if he does get this DNA test done, and it does show that they reassemble the DNA of the father, and it is indeed non-human by all measurable standards, then he thinks if it was ever proved and admitted by a lab that the Star Child wasn't human, he thinks that there would be these skulls popping out from all over. I mean, who knows what's in these museums in Peru, you know, these strange skulls that are in bottom drawers that people have said, oh, that's weird, we must look at that someday, but haven't, you know. You know, we just don't know what weird skulls are out there, so we may be looking at a whole range of things once this is shown to be, you know, what the evidence suggests that strongly that it is.
I just can't get out of my mind that the current image of the grey is just coincidentally the same as what this may look like. And I've seen some of the artist's reconstructions, and they vary immensely.
They do, yes.
From extremely looking greys to elfin-type characters.
Yes, and human. I mean, some of the artist's impressions have come out looking quite human, yes. But again, you know, well, let's not confuse the actual physical form, the appearance, or the language which we're used to describe it from the physical, you know, evidence which shows that it is different to a human bone.
But aren't you using those images to be emotive to people reading your website then and saying, oh, look?
I'm certainly not doing that. I mean, one thing that has caused a problem, I know what you mean, because, you know, and in a sense you're actually right, but I think it works against the Star Child, because when the name was given to it, of the Star Child, you know, some of the experts that Lloyd goes to, he'll say, oh, this is a Star Child skull, and they'll say to him, well, you know, you've obviously made your mind up that it's an alien, so I'm not interested because I know it can't be an alien, so there's no point in me looking at it. So,
but then if you read your website is very much on the side of it being an alien, and you've only got one page, haven't you, really, that talks about not being an alien. The rest of it is all very, very focused in those two areas, either hybrid or true alien.
Yeah, that's because that's what explains the evidence best of all. Yeah, so that's why I think that it is partly alien, and I don't know exactly what Lloyd's got on his website now, but yeah, that's what he thinks explains the evidence best. Now, you see, what you're working against is, and it's the same with myself and Lloyd, we're both in this same position. We're not biologists, we're not craniofacial surgeons, and we're not, people, you know, not a doctor who specialises in bones or osteo, whatever they call those, an osteo specialist. We're none of those things. I have a science degree. Lloyd has a degree. He has a background he got a sports scholarship. So again, we can immediately be discredited just by our CVs, because we know nothing about fossils. We know nothing about DNA, supposedly. You can discredit the Star Child evidence for all those reasons, but I would go back, you know, if I was to say to you, I'm not a car mechanic, but I can see that your head gasket has blown, that would be true whether I was a car mechanic or not, if your head gasket had indeed blown. Mm. So, you know, when we say that the Star Child bone is, 40% the weight of the equivalent human bone, we don't need to be experts to say that, because you just get a piece of the bone, put it on the weighing scale and whatever, and measure the specific gravity or whatever you need to do. You don't need to be an expert to say that. You can see that it is physically different. So that's your starting point. And then, you know, on top of that, you know, you can put the interpretation of the grey or, you know, whatever it might be. I mean, that is the speculative side. We can't prove that bit. We're just going from what's in the record outside of the physical evidence. But the starting point is the physical evidence.
Yeah, but if I use your analogy that you go to a car garage and they tell you there's something wrong with your car and you don't like what they say, so you go to another one that tells you that you do, you know, something you do want to believe, and just saying, oh, because they're not going to tell me the truth, you know, they're trying to suppress this information. I mean, you've got experts telling you that it's not alien, it is a defect, if you like, yeah?
Yes.
But those experts, you're waving away under one banner to say, oh, it's all a conspiracy against us. Which, okay, I can see your point of view, but then you're just citing the people who support you. So it's kind of unbalanced for me in a way.
I disagree, actually, because if you listen to Lloyd's talk, he will tell you what the experts have said to him. And it's really a question that I've experienced a lot in the 9/11 research that I've done. And I call it, I don't know whether I came up with this or somebody else, I think somebody else came up with this, truth versus popularity. So, for example, you could go to one garage and say, you know, they could say to you, your head gasket's blown, it's going to cost you £1,000 to have an engine rebuild. And you think, oh no, I don't like that, I don't like the sound of that, it sounds awful. I'll go to another garage.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, actually, it's not your head gasket that's blown. You know, it just needs an oil change. So we'll change the oil, charge you £40, and then you'll be right as rain to go. So you go to the cheap garage, change your oil, charge you £40, you drive off down the road, and 100 yards down the road, your car breaks down. Because actually what it is your head gasket had blown. And the other garages lied to you because they wanted to make it look good for you. And they wanted to get you money and they wanted to make you happy. And you were obviously distressed at having to pay £1,000. So in other words, the grim truth was that it was going to be a £1,000 job. But you wanted to believe that it was only going to cost you £40. And then that's what you went and paid. So what happened was you took one expert's advice over another. And you ended up paying the price for that. And this is not a very good analogy, but
it's the funniest one we've done on this show, I think. But yeah.
But you know, but this is where you get down to belief, and you have to distinguish between what is belief and what is fact and what is evidence.
Yes. Indeed.
And you know, it's not a belief that the Star Child bone is 40% the density of human bone. That's not a belief. That's a fact. That's a fact. You cannot get away from that. Right. Now, you then have to go on to things like right. What can make the bone, you know, that different to human bone? Is there any, what is the scientific explanation for that? And when experts won't give you one, and they can't give you one, then you have to go to an explanation that the experts don't give you, which that it is not a human being. It's not from a human being.
That's a big jump, though, isn't it?
It is, and that's what I said, you know, going back to what I said before. If you want to make that jump as a person, you're at liberty to do that.
Yeah,
if you don't want to make that jump, then you're going to, frankly, as you know, as Lloyd and I would say to you, you're going to end up like the guy who's paid £40 for his oil change. You're going to go down the road and you're going to end up with a broken down car. Not in, you know, physically, but intellectually. That's the way we look at it.
But you're always going to attract people then who are going to question quite strongly, I would imagine.
Of course.
How
of
you
course.
Can make that jump, because that is quite a big
of course.
Jump.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the sceptics are not going to make that jump because they're going to go, no, going on the evidence, we're going to stop here, we're not going to jump.
Correct. Absolutely, you're absolutely right. And this goes back to what Lloyd says, you know, we can stack up 10,000 of these differences. It doesn't matter how many times, you know, I repeat what I've just said, it just, for some people, it does not register because they're not ready to go there. They're not ready, and this is, again, going back to the change in consciousness. Once you accept, as a person, as I have, that humans, as humans, we are not unique life forms in the universe. These beings are coming here all the time. They're coming here every day. You know, they've been doing it for years. Once you move into that mindset, it's a change of consciousness. You realize things are a lot different to how you thought they were. And that's for me, you know, I don't think Lloyd will put it in these terms quite. He might have a similar way of expressing it, I'm not sure, but that's the way I express it. So this is the choice that you make between going with the flow intellectually, going with these, you know, a billion experts worldwide who will say it's a human deformity, and going with maybe, you know, 10, 15 experts who will say, no way, that's human. And there are a few. So, you know, this is what it boils down to, and I've discovered this, say, with 9/11 research, and I describe it as being in the intellectual leper colony, because that's what it's like. But I know myself, and I know I can argue it scientifically, that the evidence is there, and the evidence is solid, and the evidence is real. And, you know, all these points which you bring up are entirely valid, and people will bring them up, you know, and rightly so, and they should, because something, and this is the other thing, it's right for you to bring these up, and it's right for people to ask these questions, because it is of huge, huge importance. As you said in your introduction to me, this is a, you know, we try and be light-hearted about it, but it is the most important subject, the most important subject. All this stuff is far, far more important than anything you see on the television on a regular basis, because it entirely affects our whole, you know, way of thinking, what we're able to do technologically, or everything. So yes, we
accept that you could be wrong.
I don't accept we could be wrong at the moment, no. Not on the evidence that's available. What I do accept is that if somebody could show some evidence, you know, related to the Star Child skull, that it wasn't what, you know, the rest of the evidence showed. In other words, if they could show contra evidence somehow, based on something that was we could check, yeah, I'd be willing to look at it. I'm always like that. But from the evidence that I've seen and the reaction that it gets, I agree with Lloyd, as he says that this is a home run. This is a slam dunk. And if I didn't believe that, and if I didn't know that, not believe, I've used that word believe again, which is a very dangerous word, I know that. If I didn't know that to be true, I wouldn't be speaking to you now. I wouldn't be spending my time, you know, talking with you and taking the time to explain the conclusions I've come to. I just wouldn't be bothering with that, because I'd be wasting my time. But because I know that this is true, and I know that it's the most important thing that which is commonly available, you know, commonly available on the internet, and we got the test done, I wouldn't be speaking to you about it.
No, I just appreciate it. Obviously, you come on the show, etc. I'm just wondering, in the original history of the skulls, because we're two skulls, we've been talking about one particular one, haven't we? But
yes.
There was also bones, deformed bones, discovered beneath the earth by the Gill at the cave?
I believe so. This is not a part of the story that I'm an expert on, but carry on.
But I was just wondering, what happened to those, and has anybody tried to go back and find them, which might actually shed some light on this, because if you could get the rest of the skeleton.
This is a commonly asked question. Now, Lloyd tells the story of this in the DVD that I, you know, we did of the talk. He tells it in the DVD of his talk. My understanding is that the girl who went into the mine shaft against the advice of her elders, she tried to take these bones out, and then she hid them and went back home. She hid them under a tree or something on a bank on a nearer a gully. And the night when she went back, there was a huge rainstorm, and these bones where she hid them got washed down into this gully. And she had to go and sort of follow the path as to where they'd rolled. And she found the skulls, so she collected the two skulls, put them in a basket, and couldn't find the other bones. As regards the description of those bones, I can't recall whether, you know, if it says on the website, as you've read, they were deformed, then, well, yes, that's what they were. But I don't know the other details. Lloyd has said before that he thinks that if enough effort was expended, you know, and they had money to go and look for this thing, they could probably find the caves where the Star Child skull was found. They don't know exactly where it was, but I believe it's near Chihuahua. So they, if, you know, with a little more sort of going to see the locals and giving a few details, he thinks they could probably find it if they needed to, but, you know, because the money issue hasn't come forward, none of the documentary films that have been made have offered to go and do this, they haven't sort of pursued that. So that's my understanding of that.
So from a project perspective, would it be worth diverting some of the money for the DNA tests into a kind of expedition down there and trying to find more evidence that you could test later on, if so,
I mean. I think you'd have to ask Lloyd that question, really. I'd probably say, you know, if the money is going to be tight to get the DNA test done, then we might as well go with what we've already got. Mm. We also have to entertain the possibility that if indeed this is known about, then it's possible that those bones have since been retrieved and removed by somebody else, because I feel very strongly that evidence is, you know, gathered up and hidden, as quickly as possible when it's known about. So who knows? Maybe those bones have already been collected and moved somewhere else.
Yeah, there's always a story, and I'm not saying it's a story here, but there's always a story that something's happened to the evidence and you could never find
yes.
it. It's a repeating yes. kind of cycle in ufology, in alien hunting, and I put that in quotes.
Well, it's like that with everything, yes. And this is one of the things whereby this is to do with the consciousness and about making a choice as to which way you're gonna flow with it. It's almost as if, you know, as a human condition, we're actually, things have been engineered like that to make it a difficult decision, not to make it an easy decision.
We're actually running out of time. We're coming to the end of the interview. We've actually been a bit over time, to be honest.
That's all right.
It's been great talking to you. Just wondering what's next. Obviously, there's some testing to be done. What's the timeline?
Well, you'd have to speak to Lloyd. Currently, my understanding is that there is a new documentary coming out, which is going to be on the Discovery Channel, and I believe that Lloyd had done some filming for that in the last couple of months. He went down to El Paso, which is where the Star Child skull is kept with the owners. So I believe that will be coming out probably in the next few months. So I think that's, you know, going to be on the US. I guess it'll probably filter through to the cable channels here and whatnot, and the satellite channels at some point. I think it's called Monster Hunt, I think the name of this program is. I think it's on the Discovery Channel. I don't know whether it's entirely about the Star Child skull or whether it's just, you know, several things lumped together, you know, as is sometimes done on these documentaries. He said that the filming for that went fairly well. He has done a couple of before where they've, you know, basically tried to debunk it and cut down the time of it. I believe he's hoping to raise the money for the additional DNA tests. I'm not sure if he's spoken to people about actually getting it done, you know, in terms of would they do it if the money was available, that sort of question. I'm not sure whether Lloyd has posed those questions yet. So you'd have to ask him that. My own view is kind of going back a little bit to what you were saying earlier, that even if we get the DNA test done and it comes out and it shows a highly anomalous result, that will just become another, you know, yes or no debate in of itself. They didn't do the test right. Obviously, this has come up with a result which we can't prove because we haven't got another method to prove it, you know, or something like that. You get all these type of intellectual arguments with people trying to run away from the existing evidence as it is, because it is the biggest question of all. So, you know, I support the DNA tests getting done and everything, I still think at the end of it, even whatever result comes out, they will still try and debunk it. The experts will not make much difference to them. They'll just ignore it, because this has been my experience with all the research that I've been involved with. So I don't see this being any different with the current sort of state of the establishment. You know, I mean, you've only got to look at the global warming and the Hadley CRU fraud that's happened in the last few weeks, and that's not even controversial as regards aliens. That's a purely anthropomorphic thing, and yet people still don't believe that CRU have been committing fraud, even when they've admitted it in email. You know, so
I'm just taking your last sentence here, but basically, what I took from that was you saying that if tests come back. I mean, this is why I'm extrapolating. If the tests come back negative, you'd kind of claim a cover-up, and if they come back as...
It would depend. I mean, I'd have to see the evidence closely and study and see what it actually showed.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you get onto a sort of slightly different part of the ball game there, because I know from other research that I've done how results are manipulated, and if the results themselves are not manipulated, the perception management of them is. I can prove that to anyone who wants to listen, in, not particularly with Star Child, but with basically with 9/11 research that I've been involved in, because there seem to be certain fundamental topics which even the alternative research community is not allowed to come to a conclusion over, or if it is, then that conclusion is heavily censored, covered up, muddled up, because of the threats to the power base. So obviously I can't predict what will happen with these DNA tests exactly. If it does come out with a negative result, I should be looking very closely at that result, as closely as I can, and trying to get as much information about how that result comes up. But if you speak to Lloyd, he will say, look, you know, if this comes out with another explanation, then you know that's fine. I can just give this thing up and I can go back to my hominoid research, which is what I wanted to do. And he says that in his talks. You know, he says he almost wanted this to come out as nothing unusual, because then he could go back to his old life. You know,
which is a fair point, of course. You know, we're gonna have to leave it there, though.
Sure.
But thank you ever so much for your time and going through your experiences with the project and the Star Child itself, and what can you say? Thank you ever so much.
Okay, all the best.
Cheers then. Bye-bye.
Bye.